produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast episode 447. What did they do next? Part 17A, Rick Wakeman, again.
Hi, this is Alan White from Yes, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 447 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulryan, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along a little bit later on. You can always get involved with the podcast via the various different ways on the site yesmusicpodcast.com. It's the beginning of September 2020, and the YMP is back. Mark and I are starting off with the next part of our What Did They Do Next series, and this time we are back again to Rick Wakeman, leaving in the run-up to work starting on the Talk album, which he was originally going to be part of. Instead, he got engaged with some solo and collaboration activity, and we will be discussing all that in more detail a little later on. It's also been an important week for Yes, with the official launch of the pre-order for the new live album. Here's a bit from their press release. They say, following the outstanding success of their 2019 American tour, Yes are to release the Royal Affair Tour live from Las Vegas through BMG Records on 30th of October. Eager fans will be able to get hold of the physical formats from the 2nd of October if ordered exclusively through the Yes store. Of the Royal Affair Tour album, Alan White says the Royal Affair Tour album being released in October is a welcome new chapter in the wide expanse of Yes live recordings. I hope you enjoy it. Steve Howe adds, having the opportunity to bring together the band members in the development of a well-refined set of songs that captures the band's true potential is simply an honour for me. The Royal Affair Tour also featured an exhibition of original art by Roger Dean, whose artwork is synonymous. Having designed the iconic Yes logo and the band's Best Love album covers, Roger Dean recently painted the Royal Affair Tour album artwork live on Facebook, while also fielding questions from fans. So, there you go. I've ordered the CD and vinyl versions, and Mark and I take the chance to have our two pence on this release later in the episode. Around the social webs in the past week and a bit, Preston Frazier has reached heaven and earth in his epic review series. He gives his thoughts on Believe Again, and Mark released the very exciting news that he has a couple of bass players you may know on his forthcoming Project Gemini album. That's Lee Pomeroy and Billy Sherwood. Pretty impressive. Mark also had a record store day release from his other project, The Dark Monarchy, on Bandcamp. And Paul Young, I assume not that Paul Young, posted a brilliant photo of Yes playing in Peterborough in 1970. If you'd like an unofficial cassette of the classic Yes compilation album, you can get one on eBay for just £1,000. And Dave Watkinson posted an amazing cutting from a British music magazine classified section, which states simply, Peter Banks wants to join the right group. And then there are two London telephone numbers. What a find. In the visitor posts, we have the following items from Geoffrey Mason this week. News of a new Eddie Jobson live album. Rick Wakeman talking about the effect of COVID-19 on the music industry, as well as the Red Planet in two different interviews. Two different reviews of The Red Planet by the aforementioned Rick and his English rock ensemble. Happy birthday wishes to Roger Dean. News of the Royal Affair live Yes album and DelawareLiberal.net choosing the Yes version of America for their song of the day. Crikey. Also adding posts in the visitors section, which I think is now actually called Community or something on Facebook, was Denny Somach, I hope that's how you pronounce your name, Denny, who reminded us that 40 years ago was the first live band broadcast from Madison Square Gardens, and it was Yes on the drama tour. Doug Curran spoke to Roger Dean on his birthday and passed on the news that Roger is hoping to be able to live stream the creation of the artwork for the new Yes studio album when he gets the go-ahead, and I'm sure we would all like to see him doing that. Doug also posted a beautiful new record cover he has created for the Flower King's new album called Islands, which are floating, of course. Finally, in the community section, Brian Sullivan added a video of Endless Dream live from Chile in 1994, and Adrian Bell's latest progressive alternative show features lots to interest Yes fans. Over on Twitter, I tweeted some items I received from the very generous Jeremy North, including John Anderson's album The More You Know, which some people think is terrible, but I quite enjoyed listening to. He also sent me the limited edition blue vinyl version of Wondrous Stories and Rick Wakeman's Grumpy Old Rockstar book. What a lucky chap I am. Brian Neeson was first to tweet the Royal Affair Tour front cover, and Topographic Tunes added the Rick Beato, or whatever, roundabout dissection, which is well worth revisiting. Mark Lang sent me, well, along with lots of other things, some wonderful photos of his John Anderson 1000 Hands pack, which includes all kinds of goodies. I've added the photos to the show notes for this week. Do take a look. So, many thanks as always to everyone who's been in touch recently in any way, including the folk who commented on the show notes last time. Jamie McQuinn, Simon Barrow, Ken Fuller, Russell Whitworth, Doug Curran, Dave Watkinson, Paul Maynard, John Thompson, Andy Yu, Steve Perry, Jerry North and John Parry. Before we go on to the discussion with Mark, a bit of news for you. You may have missed the fact that the YMP had its 9th birthday a couple of weeks ago. The reason we didn't make any fuss this year is because we're hoping to do something rather exciting this time next year for the 10th anniversary. I've already told my family the plan and received the requisite eye-rolling, so please do join in with that if you like. On the 17th of August 2021, you're invited to join us for a live taping of the Yes Music podcast. Where will it be, you ask? Well, there's surely only one place it could be, and that's on top of Yes Tour in Devon, UK. Lots more detail will be available, obviously, but put the date in your diary, and if you can join us, we would be absolutely delighted. There's no requirement to reenact the Tomato cover shots, but you can if you like. And finally, you may have seen the poll I posted on the YMP website recently. You now have the opportunity to vote for the final name of the YMP trivia cards. Please do take a look on yesmusicpodcast.com and make your selections from the range suggested by YMP patrons. And if you haven't pre-ordered your copy of the game, then just head over to the YMP Emporium, which you'll find at yesmusicpodcast.com/shop. Christmas and all other festive gift-giving opportunities are always just around the corner, as you know.
Welcome to the Yes Music Podcast with Kevin Mulrine and Mark Anthony Kay.
So it's some time since Mark and I have been here to discuss another slightly strange album, but we're back here now and Mark is with me. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How you doing?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Oh, very good, very good. The weather's been nice, so can't complain.
Excellent. Okay, well, we're back to Rick Wakeman leaving Yes again. And I was just thinking about this. Maybe it might seem slightly unfair that we're listening to so much Rick Wakeman stuff in this series, but we really have no choice, do we? He keeps leaving, and this is not the last time that he's going to be leaving.
No, it seems to be a recurring theme with Mr. Wakeman. You know, he comes back all full of vigor and then something happens and he's suddenly not interested anymore.
Yes, and so I got my copy of Perpetual Change, my sort of Yes Bible, as it were, by Mr. David Watkinson down and had a look at the departure. And it reminded me, we talked about this before in this series, that of course Rick Wakeman was actually going to continue as keyboardist with Yes after Union as they moved towards Talk. So that's a fascinating thing to conjure with, and we'll come back to that in a second. I'm just going to read out what this says here. So we know that Steve Howe and Bill Bruford were, as it says in Dave's book, inverted commas, free to pursue their own ventures at this point. So it was leaving Trevor Rabin, John Anderson, Tony Kaye, Chris Squire, Alan White and Rick Wakeman to plot a way forward for Yes. But then further on, Dave points out, in July 1992, Rick Wakeman toured with his gospel shows while Chris Squire recorded some pieces of music for his album with Billy Sherwood, both of them fronting the Chris Squire Experiment for a short tour of California in August. So there's plenty of other stuff going on at this time. In July, August of 1992, the rumours emerged that Tony Kaye had left Yes, unhappy with the way the next album was progressing. This time, however, the rumours were well-founded. Tony's position in Yes had always seemed tentative, many fans regarding him as a passenger in the band rather than a key figure. In an interview conducted in November, Rick Wakeman confirmed that he was still an active member of Yes and that he would be going to the US for further keyboards work on the album. So at this point, he very definitely was intending to be involved in talk. Following the Union fiasco and the strain of the subsequent tour, the new album was proving difficult to kickstart. The distance between Rick Wakeman, a prolific solo artist and consequently a member with a decreasing level of control over band material, and the rest of the band brought matters to a head on the 26th of March 1993, when a press statement announced that he too was no longer a member of Yes. So, yeah, I want to just come back to that idea, though. Can you imagine, Mark, talk with Rick Wakeman on it? Would it have been a good, better, different?
I think that it might have been a bit better. And I'm just saying that because of the fact that him and Trevor seem to have gotten along very good, especially during this period. I remember reading many things about that, how they got along royally.
Yeah.
And I think that Rick kind of has a little bit of a different playing style, obviously, than Trevor Rabin on the piano and keyboard. The first thing that instantly comes to mind is I can just imagine how Endless Dream would have sounded if Rick was to play that piano instead of Trevor. Mm. I think it would have been, you know, that much better, I think. I think he would have given it a little bit more pizzazz to it. I mean, not that it's bad. I mean, it's a good song, right? Mm. But I can just imagine stuff like that. And I think that some of the keyboards would have been more, little bit more technical, maybe not so plain Jane-ish in some of the songs. Like, a lot of it just seems like padding in songs.
Yeah,
and maybe
yeah.
Rick would have added a little bit more, you know, like, hey, I'm a keyboard player, look what I can do kind of thing on there. But then you have to also be careful with Rick because sometimes, you know, he gets a little overboard and it starts sounding like, you know, a circus thing. It goes all crazy and you can just imagine, you know, all kinds of whistles and woo going on in the background when he's playing.
Yeah, true.
You know, so you have to kind of rein him in. But I think that he would have added probably a lot to that record.
Yeah, I mean, you can think of other instances where he did come back in with not a great deal of preparation and time writing with the band, but just came into the studio and did his thing, adding parts. For example, Going for the One, which went rather well. And, you know, he didn't really realise that he was coming back to join the band at that time. Well, that's how the story goes anyway. So perhaps he could have added some really exciting things into talk as well. But maybe the draw of his solo work was always too strong. And I looked up what he was doing around this time, and it was certainly a very turbulent time for him personally, financially and musically. So according to Wikipedia, in 1993, Wakeman released Heritage Suite, a solo piano album about the Isle of Man, and an album with Adam Wakeman, his son, Wakeman with Wakeman. And later in 1993, Wakeman's financial situation worsened when he was served with a demand for close to £70,000. And back in those days, that was a huge amount of money from the Inland Revenue for interest charges and unpaid penalties related to tax he had paid for the, or hadn't paid, for the preceding 6 years. He paid it, as he wrote, with help from Brian Lane's office and Yes's accountants, in my signing away all publishing income from everything I had ever written. 22 years' work had vanished in the 3 seconds it had taken to sign my name. So, yes, he was busy working, but it was certainly a case of him not being in a settled position personally and financially.
Yeah, let that be a lesson, kiddies. When you get into the music business, make sure you have yourself a good business accountant. I mean, they are invaluable, as you've heard so many stories of people, especially musicians, where, you know, the tax man came knocking and it sometimes ended up being a very dismal ending. I can think of so many bands that almost completely went, you know, belly up because of tax stuff. But, you know, what's interesting, you mentioned Heritage Suite, which is one of the records I was mildly familiar with because I, believe it or not, you know, being a big avid collector of Rick Wakeman stuff, I do some deep dives into his material. And these are some of these records I've been actually searching for. But there's other records of note there as well during this year. Not only did he do the Heritage Suite, and Wakeman with Wakeman, you mentioned that he was on tour before with a classical ensemble, and the record The Classical Connection 2 came out in 1993 as well, because The Classical Connection 1 apparently did so well for them. And there was also No Expense Spared, which came out in 1993 as well, another album that I believe that Adam Wakeman participated in as well. And there was also Prayers, an album that he did that came out in 1993 that he did for a charity. And to top it all off, Unleashing the Tethered One, the 1974 North American tour. It is a bootleg of the Journey to the Center of the Earth performance that was done by the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Company, in Canada, and broadcasted once. And somebody ended up making a bootleg copy of that record. So there was a lot of stuff coming out in 93 with Mr. Wakeman's name on it.
Yeah, so he certainly didn't go into his shell and pretend that he wasn't a musician anymore after all those problems financially and with his back catalogue, etc. And maybe that's one of the things which spurred him on to produce just more and more and more records over the years. Who can say? But so for this series, we're going to slightly cheat again, I suppose. I haven't gone into it in massive detail because it's actually quite hard to do. And we're going to look at his work with Adam, his son, on Wakeman with Wakeman, rather than the Isle of Man thing. I mean, maybe we'll come back to the Isle of Man thing one day, but it seems such a bizarre idea. But anyway, instead, we're going to look at this Wakeman, the two Wakemans on this album. So, because I thought that opportunity was too good to miss, because Adam himself, of course, has an amazing career, not perhaps when compared with his father, but then who has compared with Rick Wakeman had that kind of a career. But he certainly has done an awful lot of different things and fascinating things, and has that Yes connection, which I hope one day that we'll be able to talk to him about, which is standing in, or actually almost standing in, for Igor Khoroshev when Igor couldn't get his visa sorted out in 1998 in time to get over to the UK to play for Yes on the Open Your Eyes tour. And in the end, he ended up not having to play the whole set because Igor managed to turn up. And some bloke called Simon Barrow, who you might remember his name, has a review of that concert on ForgottenYesterdays.com. And he says, the big question for the night, of course, was who would play keyboards. Igor Khoroshev had visa problems, but they were thankfully resolved at the last minute. Adam Wakeman, Rick's son, had gamely taken on the task of learning the set in a very short period of time. Shades of drummer Alan White coming in for the Close to the Edge tour. But in the end, he was spared the need to deputise. Nonetheless, Igor stood aside to allow him to play the Starship Trooper encore, joining him right at the end. It was a stellar performance that they both seemed to enjoy the moment. A special end to a special evening. So, that is not, by far, not the only evidence of Adam's Rick-like flexibility. I suppose most famously recently he's been playing with Black Sabbath, and he also released a very bizarre and very funny jazz album called Jazz Sabbath very recently, where he pretends to be a jazz musician who came up with all the Black Sabbath songs before Black Sabbath did, and accused them of copying his songs and so on. So it's very funny and very good. He also played with Ozzy Osbourne's band, and most recently, I think, with Damian Wilson. He was in Snake Charmer with lots of legends of rock from Whitesnake, Snake and so on. And he also created and produced, I was fascinated to read, over 200 pieces of music for one of those production music libraries that you can just buy the rights to put on your TV program or your film or whatever. So he's certainly a very varied and interesting keyboard player in his own right. But he also played on Rick's live concert discs and videos for Six Wives, etc. And he even took his father's place, as it were, in Straubs and played with them for a time. So what a fascinating chap he is. How much do you know about his outputs, Mark?
Well, I mean, I've recognized the name when I was checking out some Ozzy Osbourne stuff and the Black Sabbath stuff, because, I mean, I'm a big Black Sabbath fan. And, you know, I did follow Ozzy's solo career and was fascinated to see that, you know, Adam was involved with him. I mean, you know, because we know that Rick was involved far back as Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, he appeared on that record and played some piano on there. So the connection is there way back for the Wakeman family with Black Sabbath. So having Adam in there seemed to make a logical sense to do it, kind of like how Oliver was put in into Yes, right? The family connection, right? So I don't know much of the other stuff, but I have to say Damian Wilson is a brilliant singer. That guy is really, really good. And that's one of those projects that, now that you mentioned it, I'm going to have to quickly, when we're done, look up on iTunes or something, some of those recordings and see if I can get them, because I know that that would be right up my alley, I'm very sure. That whole Jazz Sabbath thing I didn't know about, and I'm really tickled to go check that out now, because I know it'll be hilarious for sure to hear that. But yeah, I mean, that's about the extent of my knowledge of Mr. Adam Wakeman.
All right, and also it doesn't end there. So a bit like Lee Pomeroy, who regularly plays with the Take That band live, Adam Wakeman has played with people like Annie Lennox and Travis and Atomic Kitten and Will Young. So very much in his father's footsteps, turning his hand to almost anything. But what we're talking about this time is specifically the 1992 album Wakeman with Wakeman, which is apparently also known as Lure of the Wild, which is the name of the first song or first piece on it. And yeah, do you know anything about this record, and have you got a copy of this record, Mark?
Well, once again, I'm extremely excited about this segment because I know zero about this album. And this is one of those rare times where I can actually say that, because I, you know, like I said, I'm a big collector of his stuff and I know quite a lot of his material, believe it or not. But I don't know anything about this album. I don't own a copy of it. So to me, this is one of those exciting times where it's like a completely brand new purchase for me. I have one in the mail coming. I just got the email just a couple hours ago saying that it is en route and should be here very soon. So by the time we do the next part, I should have it in my hands, of course. But I'm very much looking forward to checking this out.
Absolutely. Yes. And similarly, I've got a copy on order and it should be here in a couple of days' time as well. Costing me the princely sum on eBay. Was it on eBay or was it Discogs? Discogs, perhaps. Costing me 88p in British money. So the postage was about three times as much as the cost of the CD. So that'll be interesting. Anyway, so if you do want to get yourself a copy of this, it shouldn't set you back too much. So we've got songs. Sorry, I keep saying songs, don't I? There won't be songs. We've got pieces called Lure of the Wild, The Beachcomber, Megalomania, Raga and Rhyme, Sink or Swim, Jigger Jig, Caesarea, After the Atom, The Suicide Shuffle, Past and Present, and Paint It Black. Now, Paint It Black is apparently a cover version of the Rolling Stones.
Yes.
And all of these are pretty short. The Caesarea one is 9 minutes, so that's a much longer one. But generally speaking, these are short pieces. And as you said, this was one of the four albums he came up with in 1993. I had a look at his own discography on Rick Wakeman's site, and here's what he says about this album. A good fun album all round with some good playing, but perhaps suffers in retrospect from a lack of balance. It's hard to know what journey you've been on by the time you get to the last track. I always loved Paint It Black, and although we did a wicked live version on stage, it never really took off in the way I expected. And he says, if you only have the money for one CD, then this isn't the one. If you have money for three or four, then it's worth considering. But more interesting than all that is what he says about the construction, the creation of the album. He says the album was completely finished before Adam came on board. I got him involved at the last minute, as it was suddenly agreed that he would join me on tour. So it made sense to have an associated project. What I think he means by that is actually an associated product that they could sell when they were out on tour. So what do you think Adam actually brings to this record then, if it was all completed, presumably solo Rick work on keyboards? Adam over the top or what?
Well, I think I kind of look at it the way how Rick was approaching it when he got brought back into Yes, for example, for Going for the One. So that album was pretty much completely written. Tracks were pretty much down, and then they just brought him in to add his style to it, because I'm sure that Adam, though he is a Wakeman and he probably plays similarly to his father, I'm sure he has his own sort of style, his own sort of flair, his own little embellishments that he does on keyboards. I'm sure that he probably brought in some of his own style to it. Maybe he thought of some different ideas for parts, maybe some different harmonizations of stuff. You know, maybe he thought of some things that, you know, could benefit it. Maybe he had some different sounds, because I mean, one thing that Rick I noticed throughout the years is that he likes his certain set of keyboards and sounds. He likes his Mellotrons. He likes his mini Moogs or Moogs, or however you want to say it. He likes his Hammond organs, and he likes his piano, right? Mm. But then Adam Wakeman could bring in maybe like a Jupiter 8 or a PPG keyboard, or he could bring in something that his father doesn't really dabble with a lot. You know what I mean? And then there you go. When you add him in on top of it now, playing these sounds that his father would not never use, not because he wouldn't like them, but just because it's just not his bag, right? So all of a sudden, you might have something totally different. And for a song like The Beachcomber or a song like Sink or Swim or something, you know, maybe he added something to it that his father wouldn't have saw. I mean, that's why I think that he brought in people like that, to give them the sort of outside view that he couldn't see.
Yeah. It's an interesting swap around, isn't it, from something like Nexus, which posthumously Steve Howe finished off and created an album from, and this is sort of the other way around, with the father finishing it and the son coming in to add. So there was an interesting view on this in 1997 from someone called Down East Bruce, who said, "This is a powerful, dynamic father and son collaboration. If you like music with a bit of raw edge to it, check this CD out. This disc is quite different to Romance of the Victorian Age. Shields up," he says, "Red Alert, Paint It Black will rock your socks off." So, there you go. See if we agree with that. All right, then. So I'm going to leave it at that for that record this week. We'll be listening to it next week and coming back with our thoughts. Do let us know if you know this one. There are a few, if you haven't got a copy yet, there are a few of the tracks available on YouTube as well as other streaming services, I've no doubt. But looking forward to seeing what that's like, and I'll speak to you about that next week, Mark. But thank you very much for now.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
This is Two Pence with Mark Anthony Kay and Kevin Mulrine.
Again, not for a long time have we done a proper Two Pence, but we've got the opportunity to this week, and Mark is still with me. Hello again, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin.
So we can't go really this week without mentioning all the details that have been released about the Royal Affair Live album, which is going to be out on the 30th of October, unless, interestingly, you buy it from the Yes online store, because you'll get yours on the 2nd of October. Quite a long time before they before everybody else. But, well, we've got to think about this in terms of something we've talked about before, but now we know exactly what's going on with it. We've got to consider and give our thoughts on whether this one was worth it. We know that it's got a fantastic cover. The Gottlieb brothers have done an amazing job again on the packaging and the way it looks, and presumably the way it feels, etc. It's going to be released on two-disc vinyl and I think a single CD. And it's from a different record company, interestingly. Rhino. Yes, 50 Live was Rhino, and Topographic Drama Live Across America was Rhino, and Yes, featuring Anderson, Raven, Wakeman was Eagle, and now we're on to BMG Records. So what are your initial thoughts about the format? We'll come back to the track list in a minute, but whether you think this is worthwhile from a product point of view?
Well, this is always this kind of touchy, shaky ground that we walk on whenever something like this comes out, because, you know, we have those segment of Yes people who, you know, are going to buy everything, and God bless them for that. And then there's ones that are going to make complaints about it because of, you know, the one reason that instantly comes up, and that I've had great time laughing at these comments where people are saying, wow, a new Yes live album? I would never would have thought that we would have gotten one of these. We haven't had one in so long. It's unbelievable. You know, like people are really being sarcastic about yet another live Yes album coming out. And I mean, you can't help but kind of sympathize with them because, look, I mean, we've had how many live albums now since the last studio album? It's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to think that Kiss were bad with releasing, you know, the same type of compilation record 100 times before a record came out. But Yes is getting up there with this whole, you know, live albums between studio albums. It's unbelievable. But, you know, I love Yes. I mean, they're one of my top five bands, you know. Mm. And whenever something comes out, I want to buy it, if only to show support for them. You know what I mean? Mm. I mean, sure, do I need another Yes live album? Probably not. But I kind of feel that I want to show support somehow. I mean, I can, you know, write on my websites and stuff like that how much I love them and talk about them. But, you know, at the end of the day, put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I agree with you. I want to show my support as well. And I have ordered both the CD version and the vinyl version, as I did with, yes, 50 Live and Topographic Drama. You can call me a mug if you like, shelling out my money on that. That's fine. But everyone to his or her own. If we do look at the track list, I can see what people are complaining about. So no opportunity necessary, no experience needed. I'm looking forward to hearing what that's like. Tempus Fugit, Going for the One, I've Seen All Good People, Siberian Katru, Onwards, America, Imagine. So that's the John Lennon one thrown in there. Mm-hmm. Roundabout and Starship Trooper. So if you take out the ones that you've already got, I don't know how many versions on live albums, Starship Trooper, Roundabout, Siberian Katru, I've Seen All Good People, definitely. That's an awful lot of things that you've already got multiple copies of. Having said that, there is a little clip which I've put up on the YMP website and also on Instagram and various other places, Twitter. There's a little clip of the version of Roundabout. And actually, it's actually quite interesting. It's slightly different from what I was expecting, and John Davison even changes the words up in a little part of it. I mean, it's only a 30 second clip or whatever it is, but even so, some of the interplay of the bass guitar with the keyboards and the sound of the keyboards and so on, I still think there's going to be some very interesting things to listen to on this.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing that Yes are kind of good at doing is kind of, you know, that sort of improvisation that they can get away with, especially when they exit out of the album, the album series format where they were doing the whole records, because then they stuck very true to the original recordings and how they played on them. But when they're out of that sort of segment, then they tend to open up a little bit more. Like one song that's not on here, but is a great example of them doing that, is Yours Is No Disgrace. Whenever they play that song and they go into the solo section, it's never the same way twice, whole part. So when they're doing this here now, I'm assuming that maybe we're going to see some of that within these songs, because you just mentioned now Roundabout. I didn't hear this segment yet, so I'm going to check it out when we're done. But, you know, to hear that Roundabout might have been played slightly differently might be something that could give it a breath of new life. Because if one thing that people are complaining about is that how many times have we heard Roundabout live and on an album, like a live album. Yeah. So if there's some way to give it a new injection of life and a new injection of something new to it, then I think it'll be embraced, I think, within the Yes community.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we need to talk about what's not on this. Now, you went to the Royal Affair tour, and I seem to remember you really enjoying the whole experience. There were lots of different bands on there, Asia and John Lodge and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So the two things which people have been complaining about not on this record are Steve Howe's acoustic solo moment, more than moments really, and particularly the Gates of Delirium not being on there. So thoughts, seeing as you actually heard the thing live.
Okay, I'm going to have a theory here, and I'm very curious to hear the reaction from the listening community.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Gates and the acoustic performance that Steve Howe did, which was wonderful, by the way. I think he did a really great job when I saw him in Toronto. Mm. I think they were purposefully taken off for one reason. Mm. The vinyl release. Because for them to have put that on would have meant that it would have probably gone from, and I'm going to guess here that this is a double album coming out.
It is, yeah. Yeah.
So the last couple albums that we got, Yes 50 and I even believe Topographic Drama, were three LP versions. Mm. Mm. Okay. If you were to have added Gates and Steve Howe's lengthy acoustic piece to this lineup here, you would have had to gone three LP format for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And I know from me having to go out and, well, not having to go, but when I went out and bought them here in Canada, Topographic Drama was going for near $80.
Hmm.
Okay.
Hmm.
In that vinyl format. I'm guessing that not a lot of those sold. Okay.
Right.
I'm thinking that they probably decided to cut it back to a double album so that instead of asking people for $80,
yeah,
they might be asking people for maybe $55 to $60, which maybe some people would be more anxious to part with than $80. Because that's almost near $100 when you come with tax and everything on top of it.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that that's one of the reasons why they did that.
Absolutely. And yeah, I have read, was it Doug Curran, our friend, on social media saying that it was a record label decision to go for a double album rather than anything else. So on the vinyl and the single CD. So yes, that gives some support to what you're saying there. The other conspiracy theory is, of course, that they wanted to keep Gates for the next live album next year after the Relayer tour. Whether that comes off at all or not, I've no idea. But yes, you know, I'm going to suspend my reactions until I actually hear the whole thing. And I'm very much looking forward to it. Certainly, the promise of a 12-page, 12-inch booklet done by the Gottlieb brothers is a tantalising prospect. Whatever the the music's actually like, and certainly the set itself will be glorious, I'm sure.
Mm.
Okay, right. Well, that's all the time we've got to speak about that at the moment. But if you'd like to give your comments on that, then please do on the show notes for this week over on yesmusicpodcast.com. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
Progressive rock question, the answer is yes.
Just before we go, here's the patron update. Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. And half of the podcast patrons are Aaron Steelman, Bob Martellotta, Brian Sullivan, Chris Bandini, Craig Estenes, Dave Owen, David Hayden, Lind, David Pannell, Dave Watkinson, Dem, Doug Curran, Fergus Cubbage, Fred Barringer, Jeff Bailey, Jeffrey Mason, Guy de Rome, Henrik Antonsen, H.B. Peterson, Ian N.B., Jamie McQuinn, Ken Fuller, Michael Handahan, Jim, John Cowan, John Holden, John Parry, John Thompson, and Barry Gorski. And always, as I say, continued thanks to Robert and David. So thank you very much indeed to all those patrons. It's really been quite some time since we launched the patron idea. I think 2016. If memory serves. So if you'd like to join them to help keep the lights on here at YMP Towers and support the show financially, do head over to Patreon, patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast, or just click the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. I do hope we'll be back next week to talk about the actual music on the Wakeman with Wakeman album. In the meantime, do please follow the show on Instagram, on Twitter, or on Facebook. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.